Howdy. Greg Swan here. I am coming to you from selfadoration.com. I wrote a book called Man Alive, a Survival Manual for the Human Mind, and I do these video cast podcasts approximately weekly in order to try to reinforce some of the ideas that I like to talk about, all of which are based around the idea of self-adoration, around identifying yourself for what it really is and acting upon it accordingly. And that is definitely going to be what we're talking about today. And just to kind of mix things up, I thought I would recite a poem. I posted about poetry today, about poetry and precision in writing, precision in thinking, really. And I'd like to recite a poem that I think is particularly beautiful, just as a way of introducing the idea of ideas. So indulge me if you would. She walks in beauty like the night, of cloudless climes and starry skies, and all that's best of dark and bright meet in her aspect and her eyes, thus mellowed to that tender light which heaven to gaudy day denies. There's more to it, but that's enough. That's Byron wrote that, Lord Byron, and I make great fun of Byron and other circumstances because of his outsized romanticism, but my question for the moment is, where the hell did that poem come from? Where did that come from? I wrote this week very briefly about the inanities of a popular science writer named Sam Harris, and I didn't deal with this directly, but at some point I might, particularly if someone compensates me for doing it, because I have no real there's no benefit to me to doing it, but Mr. Harris wrote a book called Free Will, which is actually misnamed. The book isn't about free will. The book is about contending that free will is an illusion. Illusion, in other words, an illusory phenomenon, which of course is completely ridiculous, a completely ridiculous thing for an academic to say. Harris isn't really an academic. He's kind of a fringe academic. He has two PhDs, but he doesn't work in academia. He works in hustling people out of their money by selling them popular science books. And the fact that he's in the business of hustling people out of their money tells you that he does not believe free will is an illusion. To the contrary, his income, his livelihood, his very existence depends on free will, as does yours, of course, as does everyone's, because free will is how human beings survive. And incidentally, will is how organisms survive. Organisms don't have free will because they can't conceptualize. The conceptualization is what makes free will free, the ability to consider every possible alternative and choose among them. And animals do not have that, but definitely if you doubt that your dog is willful, then just put him on a lead and then take him out and find a cat or another dog or someone who's handing out Cheerios. And your dog will illustrate for you that your dog is quite willful and that this behavior is not in any way explicable in purely mechanistic terms, and the attempt even to do it is ridiculous. It's absurd. I've talked about this before, that no matter what academics say, they will always have locks on their doors, they will always have luggage tags, they will always anticipate that other people's behavior is subject to persuasion, and because they're doing that, they're telling you that they don't believe the theories that they propound, that whatever reason they have for saying what they say, it's applicable only within that context. Just as we've talked before about M theory, string theory, the multiverse theory of astrophysics, insisting that there are 10 to the 500th power universes. Well, no one actually believes that. Obviously, no one believes that. And it may be a useful surmise in certain mathematical formulations, but as soon as you walk away from the whiteboard, you forget all about it. No one actually lives that way. Nobody says, oh, there's no reason for me to drive safely on the way home because even if I perish in this universe, I'll continue to exist in all the other universes. No one says that. No one behaves that way. And the things that you must believe, the things that you must act upon in order to remain alive, these things are true. And it profits you nothing to dispute them, and it really damages you to dispute them. It damages you first because you're undermining your own mental functioning by insisting to yourself that there's another universe where you didn't betray your own values, that there's another universe where you didn't eat a whole chocolate cake in one sitting or something like that. But the other thing that happens is that over time, this kind of quibbling that you do in your mind, and the only way to do it is by quibbling constantly with yourself. The only way to even affect to pretend to make believe that you're sustaining that kind of a nonsense notion is by constantly quibbling with yourself, which obviously is a tremendous waste of mental energy, but it also will, in the long run, diminish your capacity to achieve beneficially efficacious results. You are basically chipping away at your mental functioning. You are destroying your mind incrementally, a little bit at a time. But over time, that will have hugely consequential effects. And it's doubly insane. It's insane in the moment because you achieve less than you should while you're acting in the present moment, but it's insane in the long run also because you are deliberately diminishing your own capacity to pursue your values, which is your job. I mean, that is your job. Your job is to pursue your values. Your only job is to pursue your values. And what that means is that you need to identify what those values are and to organize them in the appropriate hierarchy and then operate on that hierarchy in the right order to pursue the things that matter to you most with the greatest energy and to pursue the things that matter to you least with the least energy and to do everything in proportion, to do it in the appropriate to apply the appropriate effort to that hierarchy. And as I say, nobody actually believes this. There are a million and one different arguments for why human behavior is determined, and all of them are absurd. All of them are completely insane. And I will illustrate this in a way that I think is very funny. I talked about this in Man Alive in the book, that human beings, if they wanted to, could create a star. A star is a gravitational mass. That's all it really is. It's a significant gravitational mass significant enough that the force of gravity acts upon the matter making up that celestial body with such an intensity that the force of gravity is so intense that fusion occurs, that things are being forced in upon each other at such a high gravitation that fusion occurs. And so we could take, for instance, Jupiter, and we could go gather up everything that we can find in the immediate neighborhood, and maybe there's not enough in the neighborhood of Sol, we might have to go to other star systems and gather up garbage. Well, we can just go gather up garbage, you know, stray planets and moons and asteroids and comets and things like that. Just gather up all the garbage we can find in the neighborhood and throw it all at Jupiter, and if we get enough stuff and throw it all at Jupiter, we will have created a star. Well, one of the most important arguments, going back to Newton, one of the most important arguments of determinism is watchword determinism, that the kind of causality that we associate with domino displays, where you organize 2,000 dominoes in some elaborate pattern and then you flick one and all the rest fall down in sequence. This is our way of understanding Newtonian causality, Newtonian physics. And the watchword causality argument is that the entire universe is a watchword, and that once the first domino is flicked, everything else is a necessary consequence, including this video, mind you, including me playing the guitar badly and reciting Byron, and including the poem by Byron. Byron's poem, She Walks in Beauty Like the Night, was baked in the cake from the origin of the universe. One of the most wonderful things you can do if you really pay attention to what academics say is that in very short order you can get them to the point where they say something that's completely absurd, that's completely nonsensical. To say that She Walks in Beauty Like the Night was baked in the cake from the origin of the universe is completely absurd. Where did it come from? I don't know. I've written many poems, I've written many short stories, I've written a whole lot of art in my life, I've written a lot of philosophy, I've thought of a whole lot of really bizarre ideas, and we're coming back to it in astrophysics, I've thought of a lot of really amazingly bizarre ideas, and where do they come from? I think about things, and how lucky am I to be able to think about things? Well, I'm extremely lucky, but to argue that all of this is a foregone conclusion from the birth of the universe is completely absurd. So, and that's what's interesting about this, is that we collect all this space junk and throw it at Jupiter, and boom, suddenly we're in a double star system. We have two stars in the system. There's Sol in the middle, And everything else is spinning around it, including this brand new star that is in the orbit where Jupiter used to be. And which obviously we shouldn't do this because it would result in a massive increase in the amount of insolation, the amount of sunlight that hits the Earth. And that would, you want to talk about global warming, that would really warm things up fairly quickly, only obviously periodically, because at some points we'd be very far away from this new star, and at some points we'd be very close to it and really hot as a consequence. But even better than that, I will give you an even better one than that, is that, you know, now that we've established this technology for accumulating space junk and throwing it at a target, we could go this all one better and accumulate more and more and more space junk and throw it all at the same target, and eventually we would create a black hole, because that's what a black hole is. It's just a gravitational mass. It is a tremendous point source of gravitational energy, meaning a whole bunch of stuff compressed into one tiny little spot. And the more stuff you throw at it, the more stuff you can throw at it, because its own gravitation will start to attract everything in the neighborhood. And obviously, we'd have to be very careful about that, not to get sucked into it, because the laws of physics that govern black holes say that once you're in, you never come out. It is the Roach Motel of the universe. But, you know, the center of every galaxy is a black hole. And we could put a second black hole into the Milky Way, and we can have the Milky Way tearing itself apart in two different places. And once you get to that point, you understand that plausibly, we could continue to throw stuff at this black hole. And obviously, this black hole that we created is gonna attract stuff around it, and eventually it's going to attract other black holes, and the black holes are going to merge, and more black holes could merge. And we, if we could figure out some way to move black holes, it would be so much faster to accelerate this process, and we could actually get to a big collapse. I mean, this is the oscillating state theory of astrophysics, and I don't know if this is true or not, and nobody knows if this is true, because you'd have to live forever to figure out if it's true. But stipulating the oscillating state theory of astrophysics, which says that first there's a big bang and everything spreads out, and then the gravitational forces of all that stuff work on each individual atom of matter, each accumulation of matter, each planet, each star, each black hole, attracts all the other stuff, and it could all just it all attracts itself back down to a point source. And then the theory goes, then there's another Big Bang, and that the universe consists of this oscillating state. Big bangs, big collapses, big bangs, big collapses, over and over and over again, over tremendous amounts of time. Only measuring time in this context becomes completely meaningless, because we know this from relativity, that time is subjective, that time is something that only has meaning with respect to a particular point of observation in a plenum. And this is all just completely stupid. This is all ridiculous. This is all just academic masturbation. And it's interesting in that regard. And I'm not criticizing it in that regard. I mean, it is interesting in that regard, much in the same way that string theory is interesting in that regard. But it is only useful within the context of the formal system that you're talking about. Much as, you know, a squared plus b squared equals c squared, the Pythagorean theorem, this is useful in a plenum like ours, in a physical reality like the one that we live in, but a squared plus b squared equals c squared is false as soon as you're talking about interstellar distances. There are other equations that you can use to establish the hypotenuse of a right triangle, assuming that you're willing to even talk about right triangles in curved space. But it's all about formal systems. It's not really about reality. It's about the map. And the map is only useful to the extent that it is ontologically consonant, to the extent that it is consonant with actual reality. And in the sense that, you know, some neurophysicist can claim that, you know, he can, well, you did this in junior high school when you dissected a frog, you poked with your probe at a particular place and you caused the frog's leg to go, 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 go. You caused the motion in the frog's leg. And, you know, neurophysicists do this kind of thing, and they make, you know, incredibly outsized claims about what it is that they're doing. And, you know, if you can poke at a nerve and make a frog leg jump, three cheers for you. What I want you to do is to cause a poem to come into existence like She Walks in Beauty. And if you can't cause that, then you don't know what you're talking about. And it doesn't mean that you might not someday know what you're talking about, that, you know, someday far off in the distant future, we might have some better understanding about where ideas, for instance, come from, and where complex human behavior, where choices come from. But you don't know that now, and making these claims is just absurd, particularly because you yourself do not conform your behavior to those idiot theories, nor does, for the same reason that you don't insist that you can drive any which way you want on the way home because there are 10 to the 500th power other instances of you. You don't believe it. You don't act that way. And therefore, the map that you're talking about is not ontologically consonant to the reality that you live in. It may have, it may be very useful as a formal system, much as the same way that, that you know, the curved space geometry is useful in certain formal systems, but it's not at all useful when you're building a bookcase. And when you're building a bookcase and you want to build bracing to make sure that the bookcase doesn't wobble from left to right, then what do you use? A squared equals C squared, A squared plus C squared, A squared plus B squared equals C squared. You use the Pythagorean theorem. And to insist that that space is also curved, which of course it is, also curved by gravitational effects, to make that insistence is absurd because the effect of the curvature is negligible, is nil, whereas using the Pythagorean theorem is ontologically consonant. It is consonant with the reality that you exist in right now. I wrote a post this week also about a an article that was in the Wall Street Journal about cheating. This guy is writing a book about cheating, and he spent 13 years of his life or something like that studying cheating. And in order to make this book sell, he has to make claims about human behavior that I think are completely absurd. His claim is that there's really only one bad apple. We think that there's only one bad apple. We think that most people are basically honest. No, I don't think most people are basically honest. I don't know. If you do, I want to sell you a bridge in Brooklyn. I think most people are basically dishonest. And I don't mean that in a bad way at all. I don't think they're dishonest in any kind of venal way. I really don't. I think they're dishonest for stupid, inconsequential reasons. But they're dishonest most of the time. And the way that they're most fundamentally dishonest is that they're not being authentic in their behavior. They are deliberately portraying fake people virtually all the time. And I wrote about this a couple of weeks ago, and I'll put links to these posts when I put this video up. I will put links to the posts that I'm talking about. But I wrote about it actually quite a while ago, and I put it up on Self-Adoration a couple of weeks ago about this pantomime of fake people that people do all the time when they're around other people. That they're very, very rarely do you meet someone who is truly authentic in their behavior among other people. And instead, what you get are people who are putting on a show of one kind or another all the time. This is what Ayn Rand was talking about when she talked about second-handers and kind of Peter Keating syndrome. She wrote, you know, the Peter Keatings and all of the other dishonest people in the Fountainhead, she wrote as real monsters, but ordinary people are not real monsters. They're really decent people. They're really fundamentally good people who think that they have to put on these stupid displays for other people in order to get permission to exist at all, which is really sad. It's really tragic. It's a tragic, tragic thing. And I'm at war with it. I mean, I'm openly at war with it all the time. It's what I'm doing. What I'm talking to you about right now is not doing that. It is being completely honest about everything. Because what is your job? Your job is to pursue your own values. And when you are putting on these fake displays, what you are doing is frustrating your own values. You are betraying your own values. And I want you to stop that. But I thought the article was really, really interesting because if we stipulate that most people are engaged in casual cheating much of the time, if they're when they are in a circumstance where they can get away with lying or cheating or shading the truth, that they will. And again, not really for self-seeking, self-serving purposes, not for venal purposes, but to the contrary, for really self-frustrating purposes, to, you know, as an expression of the will to self-destruction, as a will to self-loathing. If we stipulate that that's true, then all of the social sciences are false, necessarily. I mean, number one, if we stipulate that it's true, that people are lying and cheating all the time, the whole argument that free will is an illusion goes right out the window. If people are engaged in deceptive behavior or voluntarily engaged in truthful behavior, either way, the voluntary nature of the behavior says free will is real. It is a real phenomenon. However it exists, and I don't need to explain how it exists in order to acknowledge that it does exist, but if people are capable of deception, if they're capable of guile, they can only be capable of guile because the will is free. We are not automatons. We are not robots. We are not software. We are not you know, dominoes, one tripping over the next with no ability to pursue certain behaviors and avoid others. If we are capable of controlling our behavior at all, then we're capable of controlling our behavior. That's, and obviously everyone believes this, no one doubts it, and that's why, I mean, it's just absurd to even argue the subject of free will as an illusion, because the fact of argument itself implies, if I argue that free will is an illusion or if I argue that free will is real, either way, I am insisting that I can change your point of view. I can persuade you. I can say that I have become persuaded. I have been persuaded of my point of view, and I can offer my reasons for having been persuaded, and I can say, taking account of my reasons, don't you agree? And as soon as I say anything at all like that, you know, buy this product, do this, don't do that, can't you read the signs? As soon as I say anything at all like that, I am admitting that I believe in free will. But if we stipulate that people are deceiving, engaged in various types of deceptive behavior much of the time, this again could only be because the will is free, and simultaneously, we are admitting that the social sciences, which are almost entirely, I don't want to say 100%, but almost entirely based on testimony, on me asking you a question and writing down your answer, the social sciences have to be false. I mean, completely false. And I this is not news to me. I believe the social sciences are false. I believe the social sciences are bullshit. What I'm talking now about is, you know, psychology, sociology, et cetera, but even to a certain degree, economics. Economics, when it measures existential reality, can be useful, but why do people buy the things they buy? Well, you know, Adam Smith says, you know, to maximize utility, whereas everyone in advertising, including Don Draper will be on TV later tonight, and Don Draper says, in order to feel better, in order to make yourself feel better. But all of this is completely bullshit, because it's all based on documenting the behavior of people who are not being honest. And people who really are honest and really are thoughtful make very poor subjects for social science studies. I know this because I'm one of them. I mean, I really, really hate it when I look at a questionnaire. I can't fill out a questionnaire because I look at the five choices and none of them are appropriate. None of them are true. And if I'm lucky enough to have someone to turn to say, hey, what about this? This question doesn't make any sense to me. This has nothing to do with my life. You know, you've got A through G, and I need to pick option N. And sometimes you'll get practical people, and they'll say, oh, well, most people, when they hit that snag, do this. Or why don't you just fill in that? And when you get people who are deeply, deeply invested in the idea of the social sciences, then they just get pissed off, and they throw you out of the study. And I can't tell you how many different questionnaire-type social science studies I've been thrown out of, because I question everything, and as soon as you start to question the premises, you're done. If you remember your days in high school and college, you will have been in situations where you had these kind of questionnaire things. And the other way that they did it a lot, especially in high school, at least my high school, was they would put us all in the cafeteria, you know, throw 3,000 kids into the cafeteria all at once and have us seated at the little round cafeteria tables where we would sit with our friends, of course, and they would hand out the questionnaires, and we would sit there and bullshit with each other and make things up and just tell lies incessantly. So we're getting these, you know, these questionnaires designed to determine our sexual behavior, our alcohol, drug abuse, or the Armed Services Vocational Aptitude Battery. It didn't really matter. There were a zillion of these things. This is what public schools exist to provide, a means to pay school teachers for teaching as little school as possible. And doing these questionnaires was a good way for the teachers to take half a day off. And it was a good way for students to have a whole lot of fun, because we would just sit together and invent lies. And then the questionnaires would be picked up, and someone somewhere was being paid to tabulate all the answers. And they would produce a report, and the report would show up in the newspaper. And mom and dad would read the newspaper and debate the very serious situation where children in our high schools are having sex 3 and 4 times a day. And it's all just bullshit. It is just complete bullshit. It's completely useless. The interesting thing is that if you point your mind away from all of this stupidity and operate on yourself, on your body, on your values, on your surroundings, on your circumstances, if you operate on those things as they really are, not as you lie to yourself about them, and not as other people lie to you about them, and not as other people try to get you to lie to yourself about them. But if you operate on your life the way it really is, everything gets better. Everything gets better. This is the idea of splendor. This is what I'm, when I'm talking about splendor, that's what I mean. What I mean is acting in an ontologically consonant way on your life and values. That's all it really is that if you operate on your life and values in consonance with your actual existence, the way things really work, and not the way that some idiot theorist or some theologian or some newspaper reporter or some politician or some liar, including you, insist that the universe must be this and must be that. If you operate on the universe the way that it really is, then your life will get better and better. And this is, I don't need to tell you this. This is not news to you. You've known this all your life. You've known it since you were 5 years old. You've known it since you woke up in Father Time. You've known how the universe really works, and you have spent much of your life trying to lie to yourself about it. This is true. Don't deny it. I know it's for real. Here's how I know. I'm just like you. I'm really no different from you. The difference between me and you really is that I think about crap that nobody else wants to think about, and I talk about things that nobody wants to hear about. But that's really the difference. And I know that this is true because I've done it. I've lived it. I've been through it a zillion times. I mean, I basically, everything that I write consists of documentation of my past errors. And I don't absolve myself of anything. To the contrary, I know how much of my life I've wasted, how much of my time I've wasted. And because of that, I know how much of your life and your time that you've wasted, how many of your values you have destroyed, damaged, renounced, sacrificed, foregone in order to tell yourself lies. And that's what really matters. The fact that somebody cheats on some test that some academic hands out, or somebody, you know, tells lies in order to get some cheesy little advantage to collect $2.50 instead of $2, that doesn't really mean anything. I mean, these things do have consequences, and they're bad, and you should fix them if you can. But it's the underlying lies, the lies that you tell to yourself that matter, the lies that are precedent, that are necessarily precedent to you doing something like that, where you're cheating someone else or deceiving someone else, trying to achieve some advantage that is not rightfully yours, trying to avoid some justice that really should befall you, or trying to cheat someone else out of something that really does belong to them, whether you get it or not, which is, like, you know, doubly sick. It's sick enough to steal somebody else's ice cream, but sicker than that is, you know, just destroying somebody else's ice cream so that they don't get it. You have no advantage whatever in that. And I'm not saying that deceptively pursuing your own advantage is morally superior to simply destroying somebody else's advantage, but it is sicker. It is. There is a level of evil that is achieved by that sort of behavior. And all of this stuff, again, I know you've done it. I know you've done it because everybody's done it. But it will not advance your own interests. It will not enable you to change your life in a way that, in the way that you want it to change. And, you know, there's the other end of this is that people, oh, you can't, there's so many things that you just can't change. That's true. You can't change your height. You can change your weight. And if you insist that you can change your height, you're wrong. This is factually incorrect. It is ontologically incorrect. You are operating on a false ontology, and obviously nobody does that, but people do make absurd claims about things that they insist that they can't do, that they cannot do physically. But you can change your weight, and you can change the state of your knowledge, and you can learn how to play a musical instrument, and you can improve your relationships with other people, and you can work harder. You can improve your circumstances. Everything that is subject to your choice is subject to better choices. You can choose better going forward. You can't change the past. You can't undo the mistakes that you've made in the past, and, you know, you can do what you can to correct the most gross consequences of mistakes that you made in the past, but for the most part, you can't undo those things. But what you can do is you can do better in the future. And if you insist, oh, free will is an illusion, you're making war on your future efficacy. And you know it's false. You know it's false because, number one, you've seen yourself improve your own circumstances many times in the past, and you've definitely seen other people do it, and you certainly have been very forthcoming in your excoriations of other people to get them to improve their behavior. There's nobody's behavior that's so much in need of improvement as the other guys. But you certainly can change your circumstances. You can change your behavior. And it means, you know, changing your behavior in the instant matter, but it also means, you know, generating new habits of behavior, but also new habits of mind. And none of this is easy, and none of it is fast, and none of it is free, but it is all definitely doable. And this is ontologically consonant. This is consonant with your life the way it really exists. And if you do it, and if you follow through on it, your life will get better. It will get better. And if you argue to the contrary, that, oh, there's nothing I can do, it's all baked in the cake, it doesn't really matter which idiot argument you use for this, because they're all idiot arguments. But it doesn't matter at all which one of those you pick. If you insist that that's true, it won't be true. You will not cause it to be true by your insistence, but in the long run, you will do enduring damage to your efficacy. You will waste your time, you will waste your mental energy making this insistence over and over and over again, because the only way you can sustain a falsehood in your mind is by repeating it over and over and over and over again. And every time your mind takes account of real-world evidence and suggests introspectively that the proposition that you're attempting to uphold might be false, then you have to shout it down. You have to argue again and again and again and again. And if you listen to your introspective consciousness, if you listen to this interior dialogue, and you find yourself saying the same things over and over and over again, this is cognitive dissonance in action. This is how you can observe it in reality. I can't see it directly. I mean, I can see it in your face in the long run, because it will write itself on your face, and I will see it. But I can't see it while it's happening. But you can see it introspectively while it's happening. And now that I've identified it for you, I'm going to drive you nuts for the rest of your life. Every time you find yourself doing that, why do I have to watch this? Why don't you watch it? All the crap that you do, these interior arguments, these introspective arguments that you have to repeat over and over and over and over again in your mind, every time that happens, you're going to remember this. And I'm going to be in your head forever. I don't love that, and I don't hate it. It's just the way the world works. This, again, is ontologically consonant. This is the way our minds work. And I can get in your head and stay there because I think about things that nobody wants to think about, and I say things that nobody wants to hear. That sort of interior dialogue, that sort of cognitive dissonance, that is the path to squalor. That the path to splendor consists of identifying your true nature, identifying the true nature of the universe, and pursuing your values appropriately in the appropriate hierarchy. That is how you achieve splendor, is by doing the things that you know you should do. That's how you do it. And squalor is the exact opposite of splendor, and the way that you achieve squalor is by not doing the things that you know you should do. And this particular little video, I'm about 33 minutes, I'll be 35 minutes by the time I'm done. This particular video is kind of a pocket illustration of both processes. And this is ontology as it really applies to human life. That 10 to the 500th power universes works well in equations, it doesn't work well in real life. Arguing that free will is an illusion may have some validity, some value. In the laboratory, it has no value whatever in real life. And this is the way that real life works. This is the way that human life works. This is an ontologically consonant teleology. And the way that you express that, I say this in Man Alive, the way that you express that in the briefest possible form, three little words, love yourself. My name is Greg Swan. I wrote a book called Man Alive, a survival manual for the human mind. I run a website called selfadoration.com. I encourage you to go there. There's tons of stuff to read there, including the book. And I encourage you to act upon yourself, upon your loved ones, upon your work, upon your life, upon the universe. Act upon all of those things as they really are. And if you do, you will achieve splendor. And if you don't, you will achieve squalor. And I think that's a fate to be avoided. Avoiding squalor certainly is something that you should make an effort to do, but pursuing splendor by contrast is the most amazingly wonderful thing that you can do. It's possible only to you as a human being. No other organism can do this. You can live a life that is as worthy of being worshipped as you have always insisted that gods are worthy of being worshipped. Only you can have this in real life. You can have this in your own life. And all you have to do is act upon reality as it really exists. Bless you. Thank you so much for your time. Thank you for your indulgence. I know that I put people through it. I am a painful experience. And I'm very grateful to you for giving me your attention. You have yourself a wonderful day today and every day. Thank you.